Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Voices for Change 2.0, the only podcast that focuses on mental health while mixing in movies, music, books, sports, and pop culture. Here are your hosts, Rebecca and Joe Lombardo.
Hey, good morning, everyone. Welcome to Voices for Change 2.0. We are so glad to have you with us today.
Yes. Good morning. Thank you for joining us on this wonderful last day of March 2018, the month that never ends. And thanks for being with us.
You're a little extra enthusiastic today.
I'm trying to be. I'm a little tired, so I'm trying to be up and not let on to our wonderful listeners so that they know that I'm tired.
Okay.
I blew that, didn't I?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
So we have date night tonight.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
Yeah, we are very, very excited about that. We haven't gone out, just the two of us, in quite a long time and just had a little bit of fun. And I think we've kind of earned it.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, it's been a stressful couple of months, and we need a night out to relax. So, you know, it's going to go out, dinner and a movie, and I know we're a little late to the party, but we're finally going to go and see Black Panther. For those of you that know me, know how much of a superhero movie nerd I am about these things, and I kind of feel like this is one that you have to see before Avengers Infinity War, which I can't wait for either.
Mm-hmm.
So
when does that one come out?
It comes out April 27th. And
not that far off.
No, it's not, which is why I would like to go see Black Panther tonight. And I actually got this whole thing planned out. That's all I want for my birthday, is to see Avengers. That's it. And my birthday is April 30th. So I think we know where this is headed.
Yeah.
So, so that's the plan. That and a bite to eat somewhere. Mm-hmm. I don't know where.
We'll figure that out.
Yeah, we'll figure that out. So, but speaking of movies.
Yeah. Today on the show, we are chatting with a man that wears many hats, you can say.
Yes.
He is a writer, director, to start with, of a groundbreaking film about bipolar disorder. We had the pleasure of watching this movie, and it was fascinating.
Yes.
It really was.
It was great how the whole thing kind of was portrayed, you know.
It was so real.
Yeah, it really was. You know, there was a lot of times we were watching it going, oh, yeah, I can relate to that. Or,
yeah,
something similar happened to us, or, you know, different things like that. So,
yeah, for sure.
Hopefully this movie will do great things. And we want to shed a little bit of light on it and its maker.
The filmmaker himself.
Yes.
So welcome to the show today, Jason B.
Hello. Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Oh, we appreciate you taking the time to talk with us.
Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's great.
In down in sunny, happy Texas.
Deep in the heart.
Sunny, happy Texas.
Yeah, where it's infinitely warmer than Detroit.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm wearing shorts right now, just not to rub it in or anything, but
I hate you.
All right, stop telling your guests that you hate them.
All right, I'm gonna get a complex.
I would hate you too if I, you know, if the tables were turned.
Nah, we're kidding, Jason. Thanks very much for being with us today. It's awesome to have you. Right on.
I'm losing my voice again already.
No, oh, you know, it's just that sexy, smoky kind of deep sounding.
No. Yeah.
Oh, jeez. All right.
Increase ratings on that alone.
we usually start our interviews out nowadays with the same question. So we'll do that for you, and we'll ask you where does your mental health journey begin?
Mine started in the very tail end of the 90s. I don't even remember which year, you know, memory kind of plays an interesting role in all this as well. But, I was in my early 20s and out having fun with my friends, you know, bar hopping and everything like that. But it was always just something a little different about my interaction with my friends at the bars, going from, you know, having a good time, joking, laughing, to complete opposite end of the spectrum, taking offense to something or starting not really a fight, but, you know, argument, or just crying in the middle of the bar. You know, who does that?
Yeah.
And it was always so back and forth and so quick and rapid that, you know, eventually I noticed no one else is doing this. Maybe I should talk to somebody. So I went to my general practitioner and talked to him a little bit, and he suggested I go see a psychiatrist, which, you know, the first time you go to do that is very intimidating alone, just from saying the words, I'm going to see a psychiatrist. And so from there, it just, I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder. You know, they had me take that, the little test thing where, you know, it's like 200 questions. They ask you the same questions 20 different ways. So it's really, you know, 10 questions, but they try to trick you or something. From that thing, they were like, yeah, you're bipolar. And, you know, back then it's like, well, what does that even mean? There wasn't quite the education from it that there is now. So it was kind of, you know, you're thrown into this pit, said, all right, here's a new label, good luck with it. And you don't know what to do. That said, I never really took it seriously back then either. So, you know, okay, I figured out what this is, why I'm acting this way, but instead of taking it seriously and doing something productive with it, like, you know, I could change my life and be a better person, I used it as an excuse to do stupid things. You know, the bars got even worse. The drinking got worse. The doing very weird, violent things got worse. You know, one night I was out talking with a friend in the parking lot, and he was trying to take my keys from me because I was too drunk to drive home. Mm-hmm. And instead of letting him take my keys, I didn't let him take my keys, and he ends up putting me in like this full Nelson because he's trying to get my keys, and I headbutt him right in the nose.
Oh,
and
geez.
Yeah, he's like, man, screw it, I'm done. And I got so upset by that, I started crying in the parking lot, and I walked over to the frontage road. This bar was right by a highway. I walked over the frontage road, and I laid down in the middle of the street right at the end of the exit ramp, hoping somebody would just come finish it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
yeah,
so
that's,
and all in the name of, I have a label, I can do that, you know? So
yeah.
Finally in, you know, in 2007, how long it took me to figure this out, I had a, right, I'm a little slow sometimes. I had a complete mental break that probably should have landed me in the hospital, but somehow I avoided that as well. But it took that to make me realize that if I continued down this path, I was either going to die, and my son, who at the time was 3 years old, was going to grow up without a father. And, you know, my parents divorced when I was three, and my dad was not very present for much of that. So that connection really woke me up. It shook me.
Yeah.
And I was finally able to say, you know, if I take this seriously and I do something, maybe things could look different for me. So it took till then for me to finally embrace that idea of doing something about this bipolar label instead of just using it as a mask to do crazy things. And, you know, in just because you say I'm no longer going to allow my demons to take control of me doesn't mean that they're going to so quickly release you from them. So mm-hmm. even in that moment, it was a long, hard road to get to where I am now. 2010, I felt like I was in a pretty stable place, and I wanted to do something that reached other people in their journeys to let them know that you're not alone. It's okay to talk about, it's okay to ask for help, those kinds of things. And, you know, I could have written a book, but I'm not really that articulate. So I didn't feel like I could really have the stamina to make a book happen, but I've been involved in acting and I wanted to do something dramatic and engaging and exciting and entertaining, as well as educational without becoming too clinical. So this idea of, you know, I could write a screenplay around my own experiences, but make it something bigger than what I went through so that more people could relate to it. And that's where this whole idea came from for Donovan. And so then I started writing, and next thing you know, I'm producing and then directing, and I'm in it, and just kind of snowballed into this gigantic thing. You know, mission accomplished. It was much bigger than me because, wow, that's a lot to do.
That is, you know, that's and that's pretty awesome that, you know, that was your I mean, it sucks that you had to go through a wake-up call like that, but by the same token,
right.
You then took the ball and you ran with it and produced Donovan, you know, your movie,
yeah.
which was awesome, you know, and
yeah,
you know, it seems like I'll let you go ahead and then I'll say what I was going to say.
Well, as you say, to back up your point, you know, the road to get here was hell. It really was,
yeah.
Without a doubt. But in the end, seeing what this became and all the people that it took to help me get it made, you know, there's something. I feel like I was lucky to go through what I went through in order to bring out what this movie became. If that makes
sense.
Yeah,
it does. It actually kind of harkens to, you know, in this moment, making me think of this. And again, as I mentioned, I am a superhero movie nerd. So I don't know if you saw Justice League or not, but there's a scene where Wonder Woman is talking to Cyborg, and she refers to what he had gone through as getting these gifts.
And he said,
"Right,
if they're gifts. Why am I paying for them?"
Right, exactly. You know, and
right.
but it's a similar thing for you. You know, you look at it. You know, even though you went down the road to hell going through this stuff, you almost look at it as kind of a blessing in disguise, because, you know, you were able to take this negative and turn it into a positive.
Yeah, most people
right.
aren't that self-aware when they first get diagnosed.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely not. You know, and also your infatuation with the superhero movies, right? I have
mm-hmm.
the same kind of thing. So I incorporated that into Donovan with exactly that kind of message, you know, that part where the doctor asked Donovan, what's the deal with superheroes? And Donovan says, you know, they're damaged, but somehow they use this damaged idea to turn it into something positive and become something more than themselves. Or, you know, I don't even remember what I said, but.
but it's right on, you know, it's dead on, you know, and they are, you know, we crack all the time about, you know, all these superheroes that have daddy issues and
yeah, that's my thing.
That's her
they all
thing.
Have daddy issues.
You know, they all have daddy issues, you know, and
yeah.
But there's always some kind of, you know, tragedy that they go through that they end up picking themselves up and going left when they could have gone right.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
You know, they do a different way and they help, you know, those of us that need the help, you know, and that's the same thing going on here, you know. It's why we do our show. It's why you did your movie. You know, our
yeah.
goal is, you know, to help those that are going through the same things we are and showing them, hey, you're not alone. You can get through this. You can manage it. You can live with it and be vital, you know, and there's a voice for you, you know.
Right.
Right. You know, me personally, I think it's awesome that you were able to write and produce and direct and star in this movie. I've always been a big movie guy, just in general, not just superhero movies, but all
cool.
sorts of movies, you know, dramas and comedies and
right.
Not so much horror. But
I'm the horror.
Same.
The horror geek, you know. But, you know, I'll watch all the behind the scenes stuff to see how they do it and all this and you know, I'm fascinated by the whole thing. And I have a lot of admiration for you because of the steps that you took to get your vision made. So kudos to you, sir.
Yeah, why don't
Thanks,
you tell
man.
Those of us that well, we're familiar with it, but our listeners that might not be familiar with your movie, why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, Donovan is about a recently divorced advertising director who tries to be a good father to his young son while being torn apart by his own bipolar disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I wrote it from my own perspective, my own experiences and having bipolar disorder, and a lot of the movie reflects me and who I am, like, the advertising director trying to be a good father to his young son. That's totally me. But there's a lot of parts in the movie that are absolutely dramatized so that, you know, the relatability is there so that more people can understand where this person is coming from. And quite honestly, as I was writing it, at some point it kind of took over and wrote itself. And very unexpected things came out that was really cool. But it's about this guy, Donovan Drake, who, you know, his name alone with see, I'm not articulate enough to write a book. You know, Bruce Banner, you know, Murdoch, guys. The alliteration, there we go.
Alliteration
of the name within superheroes kind of plays a part in this kind of superhero voiceover under theme that's going on throughout the movie as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's constantly battling between what I call a brilliant mania and crippling despair, which those of us with bipolar disorder absolutely understand what that means.
Yeah,
and, you know, kind of goes through his journey of his self recklessness. And I like to say that it's a movie that will walk you through hell, but will leave you inspired in the end without trying to give too much away. Because you guys have seen it, you know what the end is, and it's different than where you think it's going to go.
Yes, very much.
So, and you know, so far I've gotten great feedback on it. It's already changing some of my community's perspectives around mental health, which was the goal, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to do that in other communities with this film. I think it's something that a lot of people should see, and surprisingly a lot of people that have reached out to me after seeing it come from very different backgrounds that have nothing to do with bipolar and tell me how the movie, I don't know if helped them, but helped them understand better certain perspectives around other mental health or relationships or whatever. And that's been really great for me.
Yeah.
You know, getting that feedback from people that see your work, or, you know, in Beck's case, you know, cause she wrote her book, you know, it kind of, it's almost a nice little affirmation, you know, cause you know, one thing with bipolar is you end up going through that self-doubt, you know, oh my God, you know, this is terrible. I make a mistake. What did I do? This and that, this sucks. This is the worst thing ever. You know, everybody hates me, you know, all that stuff.
Right.
And, then you get that one person that says your work saved my life. And, and you're like, okay, all right, I'm good again. You know what I mean? So, and there is, you know, it's, I'm not surprised at all that you're getting this feedback, you know, from different walks of life about your movie, because it really does speak to a commonality with this. You know, there is something that everybody with bipolar disorder is going to come away recognizing in this movie, you know.
And the people that don't have bipolar disorder are
going
to be educated in a, like you said, you're trying not to be so clinical. So you can learn about what bipolar disorder is. I don't know if I want to use the word entertaining, but
it's not preachy.
Right.
It is an
entertaining look at it. You know, it's not my favorite description of that, but
entertaining almost feeds into the stigma because of what Hollywood has done to mental health movies.
So,
when I say entertaining, I mean along the lines of the, you know, there's some dark comedy in it. You know, you kind of have to take it with a sense of humor. Otherwise, you know, some days are longer than others, if you know what I mean. And without that, you know, you're just kind of surviving with this label. So, you know, adding some elements of that comedy that make it a little more relatable also lightens up what it is to us.
Right.
Right, exactly. You know, and that's the thing too, is, you know, excuse me, you know, life isn't all drama or all comedy or all this or all that. It's everything together, you know, and a lot of the most successful movies and TV shows really draw on that, where you have a bit of drama, you have a bit of comedy, you have a bit of this and that, you know, and that's life, you know, and to have those type of relatable situations in this movie, you know, it really does. You know, it's, you know, you're not sitting there watching it, you know,
It's not boring.
No, it's not. It's, you know, you're not bored watching it. You're engaged. You want to see what happens and, you know, where Donovan's going to go with what he does and, you know, his decisions and everything. And,
don't
you know,
give too much away.
Yeah, I don't want to give too much away, you know,
right.
I keep forgetting spoiler alert, you know, but, yeah, it's very relatable and very real, you know, and it's.
Yeah, the cool thing for me, though, is sometimes that kind of stuff triggers a negative reaction for me, you know, trigger warning. And this time around, even though you deal with some of the most difficult aspects of the disease, it didn't trigger me in any way. I didn't feel afterwards like I'd been through hell, you know, watching it.
Yeah.
And that's really important, I think, for everybody involved, you know, and everybody who's got bipolar disorder should know that it's not, I guess just say it's not a triggering movie, you know, it's
right.
The only way I describe it.
Right, exactly. You know,
I wanted to be unapologetic about it, but at the same time, not cause those triggers. You know, I want people to be able to watch it and come away with the end message. So you have to get through that the darkness to get to the lightness, right? So
absolutely,
exactly.
You know, yeah. and one of the things you said, Joe, about you know, life is not all comedy or drama. It reminded me of you know, Roger Ebert said about A Beautiful Mind. You know, that was a great movie that kind of highlighted schizophrenia without you know, glorifying it or stigmatizing it too much, right?
Right.
And he said something along the lines of, you know, movies have a way of pushing mental illness into these corners. You know, they're either grotesque or sensational, cute, funny, you know, whatever, tragic, perverse. And they always pigeonhole it into one thing.
Yeah.
And when I heard that, I was like, you know, but having a mental illness is all of those things. You know, for me,
right,
having bipolar
right.
disorder is sensational. It is grotesque. It is funny. It's sometimes it's cute, very rarely. it's tragic and perverse, but it's also, yeah, I hate to use this word, but sometimes it can be enlightening. And that's what I wanted to do with Donovan, was take all these things that it is to me and put it into this character and have people see and understand that it's not a one-way street. It's not anything in particular that you think it is. It's no preconceived notion that you have. It's all of these things.
Yeah,
and
it's
sometimes it's all these things at the same time. And when it becomes all these things at the same time, sometimes it's so overwhelming also that's where some of the danger comes about. It's what
right.
I call the outside the in-between. You know, we've got these ups and downs, but once you go outside of either one of those, that's where the danger becomes.
Right.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Well, we have got to take our first break.
Okay.
So we will be right back on the other side. This is Blake MacIver with Start to Believe.
Staring down that long and winding road, I felt like I could never start again. Flipping through the pages of my broken life, just remembering when. Before I was yours, I just stumbled through my feeble lies. But now you bring me all I could ask for, you give me all that I need. And baby, you've gathered the pieces. Maybe I'll start to believe. Looking up that mountain top, I said, how do we begin to climb? Wishing I could speed right through to all the joy, just manipulate time. But now I am yours, so I'll stop wandering through those people. evil lies, 'cause now you bring me all I could ask for. You give me all that I need, and baby, you gather the pieces. Maybe I'll start to believe. Doubts close in, I know that you'll be there. I won't despair, my dream come true. Who knew? Baby, it's you. And though I falter, I lose control, your soul pulls me through. Baby, it's you. You know just what to do. You bring me all I could ask for. You give me all that I need. Maybe I'll start to believe.
I guess I'll start. I guess I'll start to believe. Yeah.
Hey, welcome back to Voices for Change 2.0. I'm Joe. This is Rebecca sitting next to me. Hi, baby.
Okay.
And if you're just joining us, we are currently engaging in a wonderful conversation with the delightful Jason B., writer, producer, director, and star of the movie Donovan.
Hello. Yes. I don't get a hi, baby.
Oh.
Hi, baby. How you doing?
How you doing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, pretty much. That's, yes.
So before the break, we were talking about your film, and where can people see Donovan right now?
You can go to the website, which is donovanthemovie.com. D-O-N-O-V-A-N. You know, when I created that character, I didn't realize there was a different spelling of Donovan. So people were spelling it D-O-N-A. I was like, oh, crap.
Really?
A little late now, but yeah.
I've only ever seen it spelled the way you spell it.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too, until after I released it, and then I saw D-O-N-A, and I was like, oh, that's, oops. So it's D-O-N-O-V-A-N, themovie.com, or you can go to Stream Now Plus, which is, it's like Netflix for indie filmmakers, and you can stream it there. And they've got a ton of content, really great, you know, TV shows, movies, music videos. They even have a music video kind of channel where, you know, they're trying to bring back that lost art of music videos. And it's like, I don't know, 10, 12
That's
bucks
cool.
a year right now, which is cool.
Wow. That is cool.
Yeah. So those are the ways to see it right now.
And take it from us, it's a fascinating movie. I know I've said that before, but it was really definitely worth our time, and I actually was thinking about watching it again.
Yeah.
You know, right afterwards.
Oh, great.
So
yeah,
definitely.
Cool. Yeah,
I think it's going to resonate with people for sure.
Very, very well done.
And
you know,
I tried to add some stuff that would people wanted to watch it again, that there was something more they could get out of it than what they, you know, nobody likes to watch those movies one time and then try to watch it again. I was like, oh, it's boring now. So I tried to add some stuff in there that as a second time viewer, you'd be like, oh, I didn't catch it the first time.
Oh, yeah for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I was going to say, you know, if you never do anything else the rest of your life, this movie, be proud, man, because it's definitely well done, you know.
Thank you.
It's good on you.
So,
good.
out of curiosity, making the film, did it kind of cause you to experience symptoms or, you know, did you feel any particular, way?
I guess in a way you're asking if it triggered me.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly.
You know, as the kids like to say these days, did it make you feel, quote, some kind of way? Oh, my God, I hate that. I hate that term.
I have not really heard that one yet.
Yeah. It's everywhere right now, man.
Really?
You almost said it. You looked at me, and you're like, I'm going to say it, and he's going to hate
me.
Should
I do it?
Yeah. I'm going to say it. But, yeah, no, did it kind of have any type of triggering effect with you or anything, or did you struggle?
I don't remember a particular heavy triggering, but I do remember when I finished the first draft, I went back and I read the first sequence, and it was in a bar. It was a dance club. It was like this high energy opening of dancing and drinking and Donovan picking up some girl and it almost felt forced. And I was reading it, and I was like, this is crap. part of the creative process we were talking about earlier, right? At some point, you're like, this really sucks. Well, I knew in my heart that this part really sucked. And it wasn't going to be one of those moments of later on going, oh, man, this is genius. No, it sucked. And I thought to myself, I was like, man, if I'm really, really going to do this film justice, I have to be completely open and honest about every aspect and not hide behind any, I don't want to say stigma because going to a dance club isn't really a stigma, but anything that's predictable. And when I remember we were at my wife and kids were out on the lake having fun, and I stayed behind to write. And I remember the moment I thought that, this visual in my head came up of this guy running in the woods from something, and thinking to myself, when you're not manic, it's hard to remember what it feels like to be manic.
Right.
And I was like, oh my God, that's good. I'm like running to my computer, and it just flowed out that whole new opening sequence. And I was like, this is it. This is me. This is 100% authentic from where I come from. When I'm not manic, I don't remember what it feels like to be manic. So when those things start happening and I'm building up to that moment of falling off a cliff, I don't recognize it until I'm at the edge of the cliff and I'm ready to jump. But by that time, it's too late. I feel too good. I feel invincible, and I'm going to do it. And so that's what fed into all that. And I was like, yeah. So I went through the script again and changed any part that I felt like wasn't really 100% me being honest about what this is to me and no longer hiding, stepping out into it and really embracing what all that was, good or bad. Didn't matter. If it made me look like a jerk or whatever, I was going to put it out there. And so that would be kind of one aspect of it. The other aspect would be, I also remember writing kind of the climatic part, and I don't want to give any of that away, but
right.
When the proverbial poop hits the fan, I remember I was writing and I had my headphones on and I was listening to Nine Inch Nails' Downward Spiral like really loud writing all this, and when
that's
I finished I stood up. Yeah, I stood up, took the headphones off, and I got dizzy, and I was shaking like I had just been in a car wreck or something. I think I was in shock, and I was walking around the house aimlessly, just like barely able to breathe, shaking and dizzy and almost falling over. And my wife is like, are you okay? It's like, I just wrote the best thing ever. And it scared the hell out of me, but there were those moments, they were also as fun as they were intense. And that's what I love about this movie is that it's so intense. Mm-hmm. But in the end, you get something out of it that you don't get from Fight Club or Black Swan or American Psycho. It's got that level of intensity. It's almost a thriller. But then it goes this place that you don't expect it to go, and you feel good about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And referencing American Psycho. Yeah, I was kind of disappointed you didn't have any type of Huey Lewis scene in there. I'm kidding.
I couldn't afford the rights,
That was a joke.
I did have Johnny Marr. I did have Johnny Marr in there. Did you know that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And kudos to you on that, sir. My wife hasn't seen American Psycho, so she doesn't know what I'm talking about.
No.
Oh, yeah.
I, Yeah. But
that scene when he's waking up in the beginning, that was kind of, it started out more referencing American Psycho and it kind of took its own direction. But that's what I was thinking in my head, was this slow opening of him, you know, starting his day and what that looked like and these voiceovers. And that was absolutely influenced by American Psycho.
Cool. Very cool. And you know, and the thing too that I like and that really I think resonates with people to where they respond to it is, because I know you're seeing this with people coming to you saying, you know, it had an impact on their life and stuff, is the honesty about it. You know, it doesn't sugarcoat anything. It's, you're watching it and these are, you know, these are the emotions you go through. These are the dead nuts, you know, what you're actually feeling, you know. And so, and again, same thing with Beck's book, you know, she didn't hold anything back either. You know, both of you, your works aren't preachy. They aren't clinical. They aren't boring. You know, it's, this is my story. This is my ride. Come along with me. You know, you're unapologetic about it, you know, and that's what I liked about the movie was that, you know, it was, you know, I've seen Beck go through some of the same stuff, you know, and I'm like, oh yeah. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, one thing that in the early drafts of this, I had a lot of people come to me and say, dude, you can't have this many F words in a movie. Cause let's face it, the language is there.
Yeah.
And
yeah, it is.
I vehemently defended that. Not that I feel that it's a gratuitous thing to put bad language in a movie, but I felt it was important to the characters in it that this is who they are.
Yeah.
And it went beyond the language. It was the language. It was the actions. It was the attitudes. It was all these different things. And I didn't want to water down the movie by taking direction from people that didn't live this, saying, well, you can't use the F word. So
you're telling Scorsese you can't use the F word.
Right. Well, that you said, know. You know, there's a lot of organizations that don't like that as well, that don't want to get behind the movie because of the language. And I get that, but, you know, again, it was a situation where I wasn't going to water it down. And, you know, mental illness isn't pretty, right?
No.
No,
that's not.
So, you know, to your point, being authentic about it included, you know, all those things that are hard to hear, hard to see, hard to go through. And I think it's all there. And it was important
Absolutely.
To be all there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. So this might be a foregone conclusion, but just for those of our listeners that aren't familiar with you or your story, what do you hope to accomplish with your film?
You know, it's already kind of accomplishing what I was hoping, which was changing the perspective around mental health and letting people know that there's other people out here that understand what you're going through. And I just want to do it on a bigger scale, you know, more people to see it. More people to get something from it and hopefully help some people along the way. You know, at the end of the day, we all have something, right? Whether that's a mental illness, a learning disability, sexuality, drug addiction, whatever it is, we all have something that we must fully embrace in order to give 100% of ourselves to our loved ones.
Right.
And that's really what this idea of Donovan has become. You know, it started out this one thing and it became this. The premiere of the movie that happened here in Dallas with the last summer, actually. It's like forever ago. you know, this movie is not taking off like I was hoping it would, but it's getting there. Anyway, the premiere was last summer, and it was to a packed house of 300 people in this theater watching it. And from all walks of life, you know, we had people there that were mentally ill. We had psychiatrists there. We had a judge. We had police officers. We had students, parents, spouses, whatever, you know, just all walks of life. And we held a Q&A afterwards, after the premiere of the film. And, you know, usually in these Q&As for independent films, if you get about 30 or 40% of your audience to stick around, you're doing pretty good, because that means, you know, 30 or 40% of the audience was interested enough to talk about it afterwards. At the end of this movie, 90% of my audience stuck around.
Wow.
The packed house was still almost packed. And people that left during the end credits and didn't realize we were doing a Q&A heard we were doing a Q&A outside of the theater and came back in.
Wow, cool.
And so that, you know, and I say this because walking into the premiere, the movie was done. And like you said earlier, you know, you go through the self-doubt. I knew making this movie was a risk. I knew that people were either going to watch it and be like, yeah, that was cute, forget about it. Or they'd be like, hey, that was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I was already, you know, so much anxiety just watching the movie, worried about how people were receiving it and all that. So when I got up there to do the Q&A and there's 90% of the audience sticking around, I was like, wow, this hit mm-hmm. way more than I thought it, than I expected.
Yeah.
And like the first question in this Q&A, you know, the Q&As are usually the same. What was your budget? How long did it take you to film? That kind of thing. And the first question was something along those lines. I don't remember what it was, because the second question was, why did you choose this topic? And, you know, one-on-one with my friends or even strangers, one-on-one, I'm pretty open about it. I don't mind talking about it, but I've never done it in front of 300 people.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's like, deep breath, here we go. Oh my God, I'm shaking again. And I shared a little bit about my story, but then after that, the coolest thing happened that I've ever seen in a movie Q&A. Q&A became less about me and the movie we just watched. And people in the audience took turns standing up and talking about how mental illness has affected their lives.
Mm. Wow.
And that
That's
was the
powerful.
Rest of the Q&A. It was so amazing. And it took so long for us to do that. They kicked us out of the theater. And we continued it outside the theater until they kicked us out of the complex, you know, because they were closing. And some people stuck around, and we were outside talking. It was unbelievable. But that's exactly why I say it's changing perspectives, because people understand that, you know, once somebody gets the conversation rolling and started about mental health, you can pretty much guarantee everybody in that group can relate to something about it. Not that they have bipolar or that they have a mental illness, but they know somebody. They've seen it firsthand of what it does, and they want to share. But they don't until somebody starts that conversation. So that's what this movie does. It starts that conversation. And I've found the more people watch it, the more people come to me and say, hey, you know, yeah, I had a cousin or my boyfriend's mom or whatever. They want to share. And that's what we're doing, is sharing our stories in order to fight that stigma. You know, stigma relies on mystery and darkness. But once we shine a light on it, it has to become something else. And I'm hoping that if we shine enough light on stigma, that we force it to become hope. And that's my idea.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
Yeah, I do too. That's great.
That's a great way to put it. Nice. That's beautiful.
Thank you.
What are your thoughts on the stigma surrounding mental illness? What do you think we need to do going forward?
Well, I love your hashtag, Keep Talking Mental Health, because it's a big part of it, you know.
Right.
Keep talking about it. You know, but at the same time, you know, my stigma, if it doesn't affect some people, then they don't care about my stigma. I've learned that. Like,
yeah.
if you, the general you, right, if you're not affected by my stigma, you don't care about it. So it doesn't matter what I say to you, because it's not firsthand personal experience for you. And so, you know, like I can write a script to tell the actors what to say, but I can't write a script to tell what real people need to say. You know, you hear a lot of, you know, I'm having a bad day or whatever, and people will say, well, did you take your medication? Because you know, we all need that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or,
yeah.
Well, why don't you go for a walk? Or the best one, well, just snap out of it. You know,
right.
I can't tell people not to say that, but I can lead them in a way of which I'd like to be heard. Yeah, I took my medication. Thanks for that suggestion. I'm glad you care. What I need from you is whatever that is, you know, understanding, leave me alone, let's just talk, whatever that is. And eventually people stop offering advice if they hear you say what I need enough, but they come back and just say, what can I do?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do that with Beck. You know, if she's having a bad day,
right.
You know, I'll tell her that I'm sorry that she's having a bad day. And the very next thing I ask is, what can I do? How can I make it better? Is there anything that I can do to help how you're feeling? You know,
right.
And a lot of times,
sometimes it's frustrating because no, there isn't anything, you know, it's something that I've got to work on myself and figure out what path I'm going to take. So, but at the same time, it's comforting just knowing that someone understands.
Exactly.
Right. Or at the very least is there that cares enough to offer themselves instead of telling you what to do. He offers himself to help. And even if you can't do anything, I understand. You know, there's that comfort in knowing that he's there.
Absolutely.
Exactly. You know, and you know, that's our hope for everybody, certainly everybody listening, is that they have somebody that they can go to. Because the hardest thing with this, you know, with any mental health issue, but, you know, in particular bipolar disorder, is, you know, when you're battling it alone,
mm-hmm.
you know, and
right. Exactly.
You know, a lot of people get scared off from it. And, you know, I mean, I've seen Beck lose friends and family, and, you know, it's hard, you know, but by the same token, you also know who does have your back and who you can rely on, you know, so
right.
It might be a bit of a lonelier existence when you've got less people in your life, but you know that the people that are in your life definitely have your back then too.
Right.
You know?
Quality over quantity.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So. You know, we say it all the time. You're not alone. What we mean is you're not alone in having a mental illness. There are plenty of people that have it as well. But it doesn't mean that in the middle of the night, at some point, you're not going to be alone, because you are. And you've got to learn how to navigate those rough waters when you are in those moments of being alone without anyone to talk to, so that you can get to the next moment of being with someone that can support you. Whatever that looks like.
Right. Exactly. There was, it's bugging me because this is a symptom of getting older, I think, is you think about something really good to talk about and then you forget about it. And there was something that you said, I'm trying to remember now, because I had a really, really good response on it. And
you blew it.
I can't brain today. I have the dumb.
Well, I understand, because, you know, everything I said is so brilliant so far. Just kidding.
No, I remember. Okay. So
see, you took that.
See, the one thing that you said was, you know, it basically essentially comes down to what's in your wheelhouse. You know, if it doesn't directly affect a person, you know, you're right. They don't care, you know, and that I think is emblematic of what's going on, you know, in our country today, all the way around on things, you know.
Yeah.
You read about how, like, for example, it gets brought up about Congress wanting to cut Social Security. I'm using as an example because it's not mental health related, you know, and people cry out about it. And other people are like, oh, I don't care, whatever, you know. And for me, I look at it from the point of view of, well, it matters greatly to me if Social Security is cut, because it's my mother's only form of income. You know, Beck's on disability, and so that would, you know, adversely affect us, you know. So, yeah, I absolutely don't want to see those benefits get cut. And I think if people looked at what other people were going through in their life, mental health or not, and had just a little bit more sympathy towards what those people are going through and kind of put themselves in other people's shoes a little bit more, you know, I think we would see real, true, effective change in the country, you know, having some sympathy. You know, why do I care if my taxes are going up? You know, I would happily pay a little bit more in tax knowing that it was helping some kid to have health care. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's that kind of, you know, having some compassion towards your fellow man.
Right. Yeah. And we're missing a lot of that. At the same time, so many people have so many things that they're going through on their own that they feel like they can't take the time to care about someone else's issues because, well, I've got enough on my plate. You know, that kind of thing is part of it as well.
Exactly. You know, and that's the other side of it too, you know.
Yeah. There's got to be some balance. And that's the big thing about living with bipolar disorder is finding the balance.
Right.
In your life, manic or depressed, you got to find somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and it's funny too, another thing that you had mentioned with bipolar, when you're manic and you can't remember what it felt like when you're not manic, you know, there's a lot of times where if Beck is having a manic episode where, you know, I'll finally have to say to her, you know, hey, babe, I think you might be going through a manic episode. Because she'll be, like, bouncing off the walls and doing whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, and she'll stop for a second and go, yeah, you know, I think you might be right. You know, because she doesn't, you know, because she doesn't always, sometimes she'll recognize it, sometimes she won't, you know, and.
Right. Sometimes you know, we navigate the slurred speech or whatever, and then you're like, well, there's something going on. And other times you're having so much fun that you're not really going to look at it.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
So what do you think are some of the biggest misconceptions about bipolar disorder?
I think a lot of it is that when the label is attached to someone, that person becomes something else. You know, I think the biggest misconception is that we're not just regular people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we are. We're just regular people dealing with something that a lot of other people don't deal with. And I think that gets overshadowed when talking to people that don't understand.
Agreed.
I wish I had a great example of that, but I don't. But, you know, in the movie, I think I try to address that with that character, Steve, Donovan's best friend. He doesn't understand it, so, like, doesn't really know how to treat him in some instances, and so it gets awkward.
Right. Yeah.
You know, like when he asks, hey, so does your new girlfriend know about your whatever?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's that. Well,
yeah.
You know, you turn that around. Yeah, but does your girlfriend know you're kind of a jerk?
Right.
But those kinds of things, you know, I think we get lumped into this segment of people that are different, and we're not really different. On the global view, we're all just people trying to make whatever we got work. And whatever we got is different for me, for you, for everybody else. You know, Beth and I both share this commonality of having bipolar disorder, but what it looks like for me and what it looks like for her on a detailed view are very different, I'm sure. You know, globally, we have these same aspects. We have extreme highs, extreme lows. There's manic episodes, there's depression, there's everything in between. But what we do with those things, I'm sure, is very different from each other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So within that, there's the commonality, but we're just different people.
Right.
And outside of the bipolar, I may have bipolar disorder. This other guy might have dyslexia. Absolutely nothing to do with each other. But we're just people dealing with what we have in our own way in order to function going forward to, you know, provide for our families, to love our families, to love our friends, to whatever it is. Most people I expect want to be good people. Regardless of what they have afflicted on them, they try.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing is, you know, the disease doesn't define who you are as a person. It's something that you live with, no different than, you know, being diabetic or having to treat cancer or having heart disease or, you know, different things like that. It's no different. You know, the brain's an organ just like every other organ in your body, and it can be afflicted with something, you know, and it'd be nice if that was looked at in that way versus being some kind of negative personality trait.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
The disease doesn't define me. How I respond to it, how I deal with it, how I treat others in spite of it, that defines me.
Right. Exactly.
Well, we are, excuse me, running out of time for today. It's kind of
wow, it's been an hour already.
Yeah,
it's flown. It's flown.
But
that's awesome.
We want to give you a chance to talk about your social media links so people can find you online.
Yes.
Oh yeah. So, you know, DonovanTheMovie.com is my website, and then on Facebook and Twitter, it's Donovan the Movie. I'm all about brand continuity. On Twitter, the Jason B is me, if anybody wants to reach out to me personally. But if you don't care about me, which is totally fine, please care about the movie and go check those stuff out.
Yeah, and it's BEE, like Bumblebee.
Oh yeah.
Yep.
For
yeah,
our listeners.
You know, like I said, it's the world's easiest, hardest last name in the world because I always have to spell it. Thank God it's only three letters.
Yeah, you wouldn't believe how they butcher Lombardo.
Oh,
it's rough, man. And you know, it's like Italian for Smith. Where there's Lombardos everywhere, you know. So
that's awesome.
Italian for Smith,
I love it.
Yeah, it kind of is, man. We were watching something the other day. figure skating?
Yeah, watching figure skating.
So we're watching figure skating, and it was in the Lombardy region of Italy. And she's like, did you know we had our own region? I'm like, I did. So we're kind
that,
of.
See, that's way cooler than having your own insect, you know?
I beg to differ, man. Bees are kind of important. If we didn't have bees, we wouldn't have almonds or coffee. So.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
If we didn't have Italy, we wouldn't have wonderful wine. So.
We might.
I know. I'm talking out my butt now. I don't know. I'm trying, man. I'm trying.
I appreciate it. So, so that said, we are going to call it a day. Jason, please stay on the line for our listeners. Here is James Cobb with If I Could. And thanks for tuning in today. Have a great weekend.
Thanks so much for having me.
Every day a beauty, every day a wonderful hello for you. If I could, I would give you everything, anything to make you whole. If I could, I would wash away the tears of all your sorrows and make them disappear. If you would just allow me in your heart, and you'll know what love can be. Now the world can make you feel happy.
Don't miss the Mental Health Memoir of the Year, It's Not Your Journey. It's Not Your Journey is the true story of one woman's 20-year battle with mental illness and her recovery from a suicide attempt in 2013. Rebecca Lombardo candidly reveals her real and raw emotions in dealing with depression, bipolar disorder, the loss of her mother and brother, and more. Pick it up today on Amazon.com or visit www.RebeccaLombardo.com for more information.
Join us next week as Rebecca and Joe continue to battle the stigma of mental illness. Follow us on Twitter at Voices for Change RJ and on Facebook at Voices for Change 2.0.